Hello and welcome, everybody. This is the Spitballin' Podcast. My name is Ben Rogers, and I'm joined by my good buddy Jamie Newberg. This is an official Texas Rangers baseball podcast, and plenty to talk about in Rangerland as they have the best record in the American League, and things are really, really going well for the Texas Rangers. And Jamie, let's dive in. Speaking of things going well, let's go back to the Rugi walk-off home run. He drops his bat. He's swag-tastic. There's swagger all over the place. And Ranger fans were all enjoying that moment, one of the best moments of the year. And then all of a sudden we realized that, okay, there are some upset Toronto fans. And some Toronto fans and media are like, wait a second, you're going to celebrate a home run like that. Well, why were you upset about the bat flip? So I thought we could start by just kind of breaking down the difference between the Rugi walk-off and the Bautista bat flip.
Okay, well, okay, let me start by saying this. I don't mind bat flips, really. I don't mind that kind of swagger. I kind of like guys that play with an edge. You know, I'd have loved having Jared Weaver on my team when he was in his prime. I kind of like that kind of player. You know, as long as you play within the decorum of the game, I don't have any problem showing a little bit of emotion on the field. To me, the difference between those two moments, and I think it would also be very easy to take a different position if I were a Blue Jays fan. So this is my homer position on the homer, mm-hmm. on the homers.
Yes.
Bautista's was not the end of the game. You don't often see that demonstrative, a bat flip or celebration at the plate and admiring your shot when there's still game to be played. Okay, so that's one thing. Odor's end of the game. He knew he was about to be tackled when he got to home plate. That's what, the dugout's pouring out. You know, players are jumping onto the railings and jumping over and rushing the plate while he's rounding the bases. That's a different situation than bat flipping in the seventh inning. But to me, the bigger difference is Bautista threw his bat toward the Ranger dugout. He didn't just flip his bat. It was little bit more in your face, you know, not so much celebrating the moment as it was, you know, taunting the other team. And again, I didn't have a huge problem with it. And I was also kind of glad that Texas decided to respond in some way, even if it was the next calendar year when the teams next met. But I think that's also different. Rugi didn't throw his bat toward the visitor's dugout or towards the mound or anything that was directed at the other team. He was celebrating a big shot, and I loved it. And every Ranger fan should love it. Luke Croy's reaction on deck was awesome. Bannister's reaction coming out of the dugout was awesome. It's a big win and a big moment, and it was off a 98-mile-an-hour fastball below the knees. I mean, he turned that thing around, and that was worth celebrating.
Yeah.
That's my take on it.
I'm right there with you. I think the two main factors, the fact that it's the seventh versus a walk-off, those are two very different things. And then, launching the bat towards the dugout as opposed to setting it down and walking slowly. A very personal attack towards the Rangers dugout. But I, like you, also celebrate swagger in baseball or attitude or edge or fun. And I think, baseball needs more of that, not less of it. So while as a Ranger fan, yes, it hurt, it gutted me to see Bautista do it. At the end of the day, I don't mind that type of thing. But I think now to try to compare the two is ridiculous. And to me, it still shows that there's bad blood between these cities, between these organizations, between these fan bases, because Toronto is still thinking about Texas. And I remember, I just go back to Mad Men, Don Draper's got this bitter rivalry in The Office. At least it's one way. It's a bitter rivalry. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Not yet.
So they're riding up in an elevator, and I can't remember the other guy in the cast. He was like, he thinks he's going toe-to-toe with Don Draper, and he's like, they're riding up in an elevator together, and he's like, man, I've been thinking about this all day. We're going toe-to-toe, and Don Draper's like, I don't ever think about you. And
yeah, right.
For it to be a rivalry, the teams have to think about each other. Look, somebody got knocked out, and there's bad blood, and there's still ill will. I just found it ridiculous that Toronto fans are still kind of going through Rangers highlights looking for some way to air a new grievance.
Yeah, more power to them and to the media trying to perpetuate it up there. I'm actually a Blue Jays fan. I mean, not like I'm a Rangers fan, but I like that team. I like the organization. I like how they play the game, and I wish, Josh Johnson's another guy that plays with some swagger, and I'd love to have him here. I'm okay with our current third baseman, of course. But you know, I like Toronto, and I was definitely, you know, I liked them a little bit more before that 5-game series, especially the way, you know, Texas sort of spit it up after going up 2-0. But I, you know, I don't have a huge problem with Toronto, and if they've got a huge problem with the Rangers, you know what? It's probably good for the game. I think having rivalries, and you know, for Texas to have 3 or 4 rivalries rather than one, and really probably a couple years ago they had none that were legitimate. I think that's good. I think it's good to have a few teams that you sort of get bowed up a little bit when they come to town or you go into their place. And I think it's good for the game and good, you know, certainly good for the game locally.
So the Rangers are having a very odd season. If you know, there's several statistical areas that are bizarre. You know, their record in one-run games, the best in baseball. The run differential is very strange. Now, you can dissect those things and come up with some reasons why certain things are happening. But the bottom line is we try to look at those areas to project forward and try to get an idea on future performance. And I think the key here is while some people may sit there and crunch these numbers and say, wait, the Rangers are luckier than they are good, I think it's very interesting that Las Vegas, who seems to be very attuned to, predicting future performance, they still very much have respect for the Texas Rangers. I don't think Vegas is looking at the Rangers like, hey, this team is lucky.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, I don't really look at, you know, playoff odds that much. I take that back from last year when Texas was, you know, sitting 10 games out or whatever they were midway through the season, and that, you know, that deficit started to dwindle, and at this point, you know, as we turned into September, we were, you know, making things super interesting. I was looking at those playoff odds just to see how statistically folks were looking at it, the way the schedule's laid out. But, you know, to me, whether they're getting enough respect from sabermetricians or from bookmakers or whatever, you know, it's fine. Whether we're overestimated or underestimated on the outside, it's a team that's that seems to maybe outplay its statistical projections, and whether that means they're lucky or whether it just means that they've got a knack for pulling games out that maybe they shouldn't, or, you know, sustaining really weird streaks of winning really close games. I don't know what it means. I'm just sitting here and enjoying it that it's not the opposite. You know, that this team is underplaying what it should be doing. It's clearly, you know, outplaying the statistical projections, and that's a ton of fun when you feel like, you know, the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, and they're just, you know, whatever they should be, they're playing better than that. Because really, the bottom line, and this goes back to, you know, an old Bill Parcells quote, is you're as good as what your record says you are, even if, you know, all the underlying data says you're not that good a team. Well, you are. You know, if you're leading the division by 8.5 games, you're leading the division by 8.5 games, even if maybe you shouldn't be based on how many runs you score and how many runs you've allowed over the first 5 months. So I'd rather be the team that's outplaying what the numbers suggest than underplaying them.
You know, we were talking about this on our show the other day. Why is it that some teams in professional sports consistently over and underperform? It's the same teams. You know, we look at the same teams. It doesn't really matter what the sport is, and you can tell, okay, well, this team is a really well-run organization, and they just always appear to be in it. And when they make a draft pick or a signing, you're thinking, okay, they must know something we don't know. That's a good pick. And I think the Rangers have now waded into that territory. They've been good for an awfully long time. And I think right now the organization is hitting on all cylinders, whether it's, you know, synergy from the front office, you know, from to the clubhouse, to the dugout, you know, to the manager, leadership, culture, depth, chemistry, confidence, just believing in what you're trying to achieve. The Rangers appear to be one of those organizations now that, you know, maybe for the foreseeable future, there's going to be statistical oddities about what they do because, like you said, you know, they're better than the sum of their parts when it all comes together because of these intangibles that aren't lucky. They're ingrained within the fabric of the DNA of the organization now.
And I think you can even add to that, and, you know, if a lot of these projections are based on run differentials or whatever, this roster has changed, and you have to give the front office credit for that. Even going back before the season, is the reason that Ian Desmond has had a better year, is that because he's had some weight taken off of him mentally by being put in the outfield where he feels he's more in more of a natural position that no other organization had ever done with him before. You know, he'd been with one organization, but they never put him in the outfield in the big leagues, and no other teams apparently went to him this winter, you know, offering him legitimate money to play in the outfield, and therefore he was there for the taking once spring training got underway. You know, give the front office credit for seeing that, and maybe that's one reason he's outplaying his projections of where he should be in his career. You look in season, is Jonathan Lucroy having a bigger impact on the pitching staff than what was being done behind the plate before he got here? That's the front office. Is Lucroy maybe even being more productive himself offensively? You know, the batting average isn't there, but in terms of the slug and the OPS, and you know, he's outplaying what he was doing this year in Milwaukee. Maybe that's because he's been injected into a pennant race, and that's brought more out of him in terms of adrenaline and focus and fighting in August going into September, whereas he might, you know, not have been playing at that level with his team 20 games out of first place. And that's partly maybe chemistry, but you also have to give the front office credit for bringing in guys that are hungry. Carlos Beltran has never won a World Series, which is crazy. I mean, he's been on really good teams. He's been to the World Series, but he hasn't won one, and he came here and was on fire for a couple weeks, and then he went into that deep slump for about a week and a half that he seems to have come out of. But you know, let's see what he does in September and in October, and you know, maybe they get more out of Beltran than his numbers would have suggested, because he's hungry to get that one ring that he's not been able to get yet, which is something we talk about with Beltre a lot. You know, he's never won a World Series ring, and I'm not here to say that these players turn into something that they're not just because they haven't won a World Series, but I do think there's something to be said for a player playing in a pennant race and playing for something that they've never been able to get before, especially if they're in the middle or toward the end of their career. That's why they play the game. And I think sometimes that does bring a little bit extra out of these veteran players. And the Rangers have been, I mean, they've got a track record of acquiring guys that they believe are hungry. Mike Napoli fit that. Joe Nathan even fit that. They've brought in guys that are not only established veteran players that are productive, but, you know, they all come here. No, they don't all come here, but a lot of them have come here with that similar goal, that it is time to win something, because, you know, for whatever reason, that player's not been in position before to be part of that final parade.
What would you most like to see the Rangers accomplish during September?
Well, a couple things. You know, you want them playing well going into the playoffs. You know, you just want them to be clicking a little bit and guys going in, you know, not in deep slumps hitting or having lost a release point if they're, you know, working out of the bullpen. The flip side of that is you hope over the last week that you can sort of get your pitching in order and decide, you know what, I want Sam Dyson pitching, you know, four times over the last 9 days. And if you're in a, you know, having big enough lead in the division, maybe you can do that and space out exactly the way you want. You can get a couple guys in there to spot start if needed, so that you can get your playoff rotation lined up and have the exact guys you want going games 1-2 at home, hopefully, and then games 3-4 on the road. You know, ideally, you want to be able to decide before those four games, you know, who's ideal to pitch them. And you know, if the last week or two of the season is if the Rangers are in the kind of shape then that they are now, you can rearrange that. And you know, Cole Hamels likes to pitch on 4 days rest, and he may be on that schedule from today forward no matter what. But here and there, if you can give Martin Perez an extra day, or you know, certainly Colby Lewis when and if he comes back, if he's healthy, you want to be careful with his workload going in. Derek Holland, same thing. Darvish, a little different because, of course, when in Japan he was used to a six days off or five, depending on whether they were in a situation where they had a day off each week. But you know, maybe he can use an extra day here and there, and you can line things up. So to me, you want to go in with the team playing well into the playoffs, but at the same time, you'd like to have enough of a lead that you can get players the right kind of rest so that your starting rotation is lined up the way you want it and some other guys aren't overworked going into October.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I want to make sure that bullpen is so refreshed. I want to make sure those guys are rested and ready and you know, hitting on all cylinders at just the right time. So if that happens, you know, look, if the Rangers have a massive lead and if it goes down the way it's happening right now, it'll be very different to how they've won it here of late, or how the seasons have ended of late, where it's gone down to the wire and, you know, you've got Cole Hamels pitching on the last day or in a playoff, or, you know, it would be pretty, it would be different. Let's just say if the Rangers were able to somewhat coast in and relax and get healthy and then approach the postseason in that regard, but you wouldn't want them to get too comfy or too rested.
That's right. And what you don't want is to go in with some guys that are just either because of the game's not meaning much or just because of them falling into slumps. You don't want them going into the playoffs not in a good groove. I mean, you want everybody rested, but at the same time, you want them grooving, both offensively and on the mound, and that's obviously key. You don't want to go into a playoff sort of on your heels, even if you came in with a big lead. You want your players clicking at that point.
Awesome, awesome. Well, hey man, it's about to be really fun around here. It's been fun to this point, but it's about to go up another notch or two. Good times here in Rangers land. For Jamie Newberg, I'm Ben Rogers. Thanks for listening to the Spitballin' Podcast. Until next time, happy baseball, everybody.